Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are at the 18th day of July 2013. We are still broadcasting live. I'm still broadcasting live from Capitol Hill, the headquarters of the AIC campaign, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign. AICACT.org is our online home. That's where you can go to learn everything you need to know about helping us end the Appalachian apocalypse, helping us end the human health, human rights disaster that is mountaintop removal in central Appalachia. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. You can also find us on TuneIn Radio. And by us, I mean all of us, our conversations, our discussions, on the Stitcher Internet Radio app and on a wide variety of others, places like Dar.fm and Streama.com, and we're available on your Roku devices. And gosh, you can get the podcast address at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. Or, well, heck, you could go and get it for free at iTunes if you want to. It's all ever so easy. All of this happens because you keep it going. You keep this effort on the air. And we try to raise $150 every night to make that happen. Last night, we had a nice combination of folks, including our buddy John, who... Another John, who kicked in to make that happen. It's always inspiring to see the determination that people feel toward keeping this up and running. So $150 this evening, $150 tomorrow, and that will get us through this week. It's been a busy week, reaching out and trying to get meetings inside Senate offices, and more than a little bit frustrating, too, to tell you the truth. It's kind of a convoluted process, writing to get the meeting and then to be written back and be told, sorry, we don't have time for you. I can think of three or four Democratic Senate offices right off the top of my head that have told us that. So that means I have to be a little bit more persuasive, forceful in that effort, and I'm doing that. So next week we will have a bunch of meetings and hopefully not a lot of interruptions in the broadcast schedule, although I know that there is one potential interruption out there already, and that is Tuesday of next week. So just maybe mark that on your calendars. That may be a no-show day. Not for sure, but it may be. At any rate, if you want to help keep all of this going, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The traditional mail address, if you prefer, stamps and envelopes and such like, that can then be fronts of which can be photocopied by the United States Postal Service. Well, you'll want to mail that to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801, and a gentle reminder, don't make anything payable to Bob Kincaid. Bob Kincaid can't cash anything. Checks, money orders, and the like need to be made payable to The Horn or Head On Communications, something along those lines. Thanks, Marty. Signal coming through 5x5. Wonderful. Good to hear it. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday here. Every Thursday is. And frankly, through the course of the day, I've gotten myself all ready to deal with Thorn in the Side Thursday. But as is often the case, the closer we get to airtime, the more likely it is that something will come into focus that will just change the entire lineup. And, well, one of the beauties, I suppose, of operating this way is that we don't have to be committed to a script or anything like that along the way, and we can shift gears and walk and chew gum at the same time, that sort of thing. And that's what happened today. And it was a combination of things. First of all, a note that came in from Texas Betsy. She wrote earlier today and said, I'm only 50 minutes into last night's podcast, but you said something about how your wish is that the conversation would continue outside of the program and that community would build. It does, and it has. Between the Skype group every night, not just weekends, and over the course now of years, three Facebook groups, which people find under Head On or H.O.R.N, not H-O-R-N, Cassie's Cookie Club and others, we continue from afar. But even in the more physical world, we build community. Didn't a horny go to Bill in Cleveland's house to help with his computer? I've met Lee, the smart mom, you, Cassie, Steady, Joe Vecchio, and one or two more. You've met even more than that. I'm going to meet some more, hopefully, when I get to go down to Texas around September 11th or so of September. When Steady went from the Pacific Northwest to Jackson County, Mississippi after Katrina, he was housed and fed by Horn members every step of the journey there and back, twice. The names have changed somewhat, but I imagine that a Horn family member making a similar trip today would get the same level of help and hospitality. We are family, both on the interweb tubes and in person. And I really appreciate that gentle reminder coming from Betsy. And it worked perfectly with a note that I got from Mark in San Francisco. He sent along a story, and I'm going to share it with you in a minute, because as Arthur Miller wrote in Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid. Another in my series, Mark writes, of emails to you extolling the necessity and virtue of the Horn family commune. A reminder that this is why creating and sustaining community is so important, the continuity of our humanity. And this is the story that basically rearranged everything for the program tonight. It comes out of the Daily Mail. I understand. But it comes out of the Daily Mail in the UK. And it's a story, it's a report, a newspaper article, that serves as a reminder of the fragility of human life upon this planet. Annie Shaw writes the article at the Daily Mail, and it immediately spoke to me when Mark sent it along. The last member, well, wait a minute. I want you to hear something first. I want you to hear a particular sort of human speech.
Pufe tul kedo tonge jarate kudunya ilade jarate kudunya ilade jarate kudunya ilade jarate.
Maybe it doesn't sound like much to you. It isn't something that one would, in any language that we are familiar with, probably be able to extrapolate even cognate words. The earth is shaking as the tree falls. With a great thud. That's what those words said. The earth is shaking as the tree falls with a great thud. The language is a language called Bow. And that language will be heard no more as spoken and expressed by a native speaker on this, or as far as we know, any other planets. It's over for Bo. Because the last native speaker of the language died. Now, granted, Mark sent this along. It's a story from a while back. But it's a reminder, as Mark noted, it is a reminder of our common humanity. A language that will never be heard on planet Earth again. And which has likely been heard on this planet almost continuously for 65,000 years. Bo was a language spoken in the Andaman Islands. The language was thought to date back to pre-Neolithic times. The language may well have been carried in its proto-form out of Africa itself, along the route that was followed by human beings migrating toward Asia. The last individual to speak it was 85 years old when she died and took her language with her. And yes, attention must be paid. The Andaman Islands sit in the further reaches of the Bay of Bengal and south of Burma / Myanmar and south of Bangladesh. And in a moment like that, we realize the fragility, I hope, of the entirety of our human experience. Fragile, fragile, fragile. So thank you, Mark, for sending that story along. It provides perspective, to say the least. 65,000 years, and the language is extinct, and the people who carried that language are extinct as well. Food for thought, no? Whatever language we speak, it is possible to conceive, if you think about it, that someday someone might speak the last of ours. There might someday be a last speaker of English. Good God, don't tell the Tom Tang Credos and the rest of the right-wing creepies about that. They're liable to have a stroke. But it's true. Because English itself is nothing but an amalgam. If we could find an original speaker of original English, you wouldn't get a lot out of the conversation, because there's a whole bunch of French in what we speak, and 70% of the language is from Latin. That's why learning Latin is so damned handy. A little bit of Norman French, a smattering of other French, some Latin, some German. And frankly, in the evolution of the evolutionary process of the processes of these things, there's every reason to believe that the next great change in English will come in Asia. Because there are more English speakers in Asia now than there are in what we used to call the English speaking world. And they are putting it to uses that most make sense to them. the French, bless their hearts, try to hold back the tides and maintain linguistic purity. The Germans seem to take an absolute, an exact polar opposite approach and invite, come on in. That's a lovely noun. Let's hook that up with one of these, and you wind up with nouns that are as long as freight trains, and they're magnificent. Everything evolves, everything changes. But sometimes things just go away. And when I read that story, even though it was not, you know, it's not a breaking news story, it was just a reminder to focus, to pay attention, to notice the music inherent in our speech and the ideas that that speech conveys. The tree is falling with a mighty thud, a big thud. Yeah. Interesting that that would be the snippet of speech, the something about a tree falling, when the world is in a place of being largely deforested. Interesting. So yeah, attention must be paid. And thank you to Mark, and thank you for his note. Last member of 65,000-year-old tribe dies, taking one of world's earliest languages to the grave, and humanity and our world are diminished by that much more. Indeed. And of course, this was a language that manifested itself in oral traditions. Who knows what knowledge, what wisdom was lost? What understanding of what plants did which and healed this and made that better and made other things tasty? And who knows? It's been a brutally hot day here. Agnes pointed out something to me earlier about, I guess, the heat index here in downtown D.C., climbed up around 105 or so today. That would be along about the time that I was ducking into a dark little place and saying, "Bartender, Pabst Blue Ribbon, please." Because I went walkabout. I try to go walkabout every day while I'm here. It's not easy to take a walk which might seem strange living in the mountains as I do. It's not easy to take a walk where I live because you're constantly at risk of being run over by something, not the least of which are coal trucks. But there are nice civilized sidewalks here, and you can go for quite some time. So in the last couple of days, I've put in a couple of miles a day of walking, and I love it. I just love it. Today, I walked over toward Eastern Market, and the vegetarians in the audience will be very proud of me for what I'm about to say. The idea today of eating meat was just obnoxious. So instead, I went in search of the things that humans are supposed to eat at the height of the growing season. I found some nice bread. I found a couple of really nice avocados. I got some sprigs of fresh dill. I got a lemon. I found some beautiful tomatoes. I found some nice peaches that were ready, ripe and ready to eat, some beautiful plums, some watermelon. And that's been pretty much the menu today. Mercy sakes, I sliced up the avocado nice and thin, drizzled some lemon juice on them, hit them with some salt and a couple of blasts of hot sauce, and put it on some toasted sourdough and with some tomato slices. Holy mackerel. And dill. The dill. Don't forget the dill. And I'm a happy little vegetarian for a day. There are rhythms. See, for instance, if your tribe has been on the planet for 65,000 years, you were evolutionarily, you were obviously pretty evolutionarily successful. And you figured out things like that. You eat certain things at certain times. And a big old hot bowl of beans with a hunk of ham in it, or a big old burger or a steak, or no, this is the time of year for fresh, sweet, tart, good things. And it was sure enough good. So when I go walk about in town, my mind gets to wander a little bit. And yes, on the way back it was brutally hot, and yes, I did duck into a little place that's been open for 60 some odd years, which around here is freaking ancient. And yeah, the PBR was cheap. Can't beat a dollar draft in Washington D.C. No sir, you can't. And it was better hydration than water itself. And then came on home and went back to prepping for the program. So that was my afternoon here in preparing for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Nice little group gathering in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Jump on in. It's free and it's easy if you've never done it before. And if you have and haven't been in a while, well, come on back. Yeah, see, there we go. I sparked something in the chat room. Sparky noting, I'm up to 4 tomatoes a day. You can't go wrong. You just can't go wrong. So, pop on over to the chat room if you want to. Thorn in the Side Thursday? Yeah, we got that. Interesting stuff out there. Silly stuff out there. And Lord knows I do, after all the heavy stuff, I do occasionally have real appreciation for the silly. And then the icky tales of the surveillance state. It is real, you know, from the license plates, the license plate numbers that are being gathered and collated, to the envelopes that are being scanned or photocopied or whatever on their way through the sorting machines. It's very real. There's an open question of motivation, an open question of utility, but it is most assuredly real. And they really are watching. A story, oh my God, welcome to the surveillance state. This is apparently out of Germany and not the United States. It comes from, it's dated today, or yesterday rather, and it comes from a site called Tech Dirt. You're going to love this. Man suggests nature walk to observe NSA spies' threatened habitat, has law enforcement visit his habitat. So this is the story of Daniel Bongert. He's 28 years old, and he posts a bunch of serious stuff to his Facebook page. He says, I rarely post funny pictures. So he posted something on Facebook, and he was trying, this very, very serious person, to actually be cute. And so he... having read about the surveillance disclosures he put an invitation on his Facebook page for an excursion to the top secret U.S. facility known as the Dagger Complex in Griesheim. Is there a Griesheim in the United States? No, I think this is Germany. Griesheim, G-R-I-E-S-H-E-I-M. So he, trying to be cute, invited people to come along for a nature walk involving, quote, joint research into the threatened habitat of NSA spies. He went on and said, if we are really lucky, we might actually see a real NSA spy with our own eyes. And suggested people bring cameras and, quote, flowers of all kinds to improve the appearance of the NSA spy's habitat. So everybody, all of his buddies who read this, it's a joke. They knew it was a joke. Interestingly, however, some folks did not know it was a joke. It had been 4 days since he had posted his nature walk story when he got a call from the local constabulary. And they wanted to talk about his post of his nature walk to go and observe NSA spies in their natural habitat. And even as the phone was ringing from the constabulary seeking to ask him questions, the daggum doorbell rang at the same time. And that's when the police on the telephone told him that he should talk with the officers who were standing outside his door. So, Mr. Bongert put on a T-shirt. The T-shirt necessarily had a photograph of Eddie Snowden and the legend Team Edward. And he answered the door. And he told the police, yeah, well, my intention was to go out and watch the spies. And that's when he said, the officers did smirk a bit. Now, it seems a bit of a tormented path to go from Facebook post of nondescript guy who posts serious stuff on his Facebook page to a simultaneous phone call and visit from the local police. So how'd that happen? Well, it turns out that the U.S. military police saw the post, and they were the first to see it, and they passed the info along to the local police there in, where? Yeah, Griesheim. So that they told the police came and visited and apparently smirked. Not long after, however, and this story can be found at spiegel.de, not long later, Bongert got another call asking him to report to Central Commissariat 10 of the German Federal Police. And after he was notified by phone to do that, just to make double sure, they sent a member of the German Federal Police to his door. At his home, he was queried. Herr Bongert says they wanted to know if I had connections with anarchist groups or other violent people. And he told them repeatedly, no, he didn't. He really, really didn't. And that his point was just to go for a walk. The federal police were taking things much more seriously than the local cops. And they told him he was a smart aleck. I have no idea what the German for smart aleck is, and we'll leave that to others to figure out. So then, they told him that he would need a permit for his demonstration. His papers were not in order. And then they said, by the way, you've posted nothing about our visiting you. We were not here. You did not speak with us. You know, it's the heavy-handed stuff that always gets them. The nerve. We were not here. I mean, what, have they got one of those flashy things for Men in Black? So the Spiegel article continues, Bongert took their first piece of advice, registering his demonstration, even though, as he says, it wasn't supposed to be one. It was a lark. It was a joke. This is not funny. We are not funny people. We have never had senses of humor. On the other hand, where the police told him not to report his visit on their Facebook page, no, he signed right into Facebook and wrote, how much more proof do you need? Everyone says they aren't affected, but then I invite people for a walk and write obvious nonsense in the invitation, and suddenly the federal police show up at my home. Hi, Agent Fred. We've been talking to Agent Fred for years. I'm just, well, maybe Sandra's observation is the one that we need to pay the most attention to, that maybe more people are aware now. I still submit that more people are aware of what SpongeBob does on any given day in this country than they are domestic spying or anything like that. But, well, more people are aware. So local media got hold of Herr Bongert's story. And suddenly 70 people wanted to join him in his nature walk to observe NSA spies in their natural habitat at the Dagger. Really? Again with the ham-fisted, heavy-handed, the Dagger, the Dagger. Operation Rolling Thunder. The Dagger? That's where the NSA spies work in Germany, in Griesheim? The Dagger? So they took their little nature walk, and no, none of they're timid things, the spies, and none of them came out of their little cubicles to wave or even accept flowers from the people observing them. Spiegel asked him, you going to do it again? And he responded, I didn't say that, and I didn't write it anywhere. Oh, for heaven's sakes. So what's the takeaway on this? No. Really, Agnes? All right. The flag is falling. The Republic is in jeopardy. They have removed SpongeBob from Netflix. There are some things up with which I will not put. They took SpongeBob off Netflix. But no, what's the takeaway from this? Really? Be careful what you write on Facebook. Oopsie. Last night, I actually was posting about the giant freaking cockroaches that have apparently descended upon this city, and no politician jokes. I tried to be at least moderately respectful, because the image of a cockroach just fills me with shrieking dread and horror, so I didn't post the photo of the great big giant freaking cockroach. Although one did pose long enough, she tolerated me setting a dime down next to him, of which he or she was manifestly larger than, by about a factor of three, and took a photo, but I did, no. Is that code? Is there some wildly paranoid algorithm or perhaps human being deep at work in the bowels of some government contractor? Because remember, government employees are evil, and we can't have government employees with oaths to the government working on, you know, stuff like national security, because, well, that's just wrong. But is that some kind of code? This city is crawling with giant roaches. Somebody going to come knock on the door? If you posted that on your Facebook page and you lived in Griesheim, would somebody knock on your door there and tell you that you were a smart aleck? Standing there in your Team Edward Snowden t-shirt? I wonder if he's getting a cut. I wonder if Greenwald gets his 10% off that. Oh, well. Oh, okay. It's getting all it's getting clearer and clearer and clearer. Marty pointing out, it's not that Netflix dumped SpongeBob. Amazon swiped it away. What? Oh, capitalism. The heartbreak you impose. Amazon swipes SpongeBob from Netflix in most expensive deal yet. Amazon.com wrote its largest ever check for a subscription streaming deal, securing hundreds of mostly children's TV programs from Viacom for its internet video service and ratcheting up pressure on rival Netflix. Amazon's deal with Viacom gives the world's largest internet. And remember, there will be lots and lots of metadata when your precious pumpkin tunes into Dora the Explorer or SpongeBob or what the hell ever. God knows Ni Hao Kai Lan. Dora, Go Diego Go, Blue's Clues, the Backyardigans. Okay, well, thank you for clearing that up, Marty. And isn't that charming to think that, because little ones do start learning early how to operate the computer box. Isn't it just charming to think that they can get a head start, because we can't afford the real head start anymore thanks to, well, sequestration and austerity, but they can get a head start in their learning career by joining in on the data, by getting their very own data file started with the NSA, or not really the NSA, some independent third-party contractor who has no oath or duty of loyalty to the United States whatsoever. Hi, babies. Opa loves you. I miss you. Don't type anything funny in the computer. Mommy and Daddy don't need the grief. For pity's sakes. Yeah, you're right, Agnes. It is insanity. Oh, wow. Note in here from Jared. J-Red. Yo, Bob, my homie Sergi loves your show. Can't stop talking about you to us. He's even got some of us a-listening. Today's his 21st birthday. Holy cow. His birthdays in the past have been pretty shitty, what with little celebration and giftage and whatnot. Maybe you could give him an on-air birthday shout-out. I'm sure it'd make his day. Well, darn straight. Thanks for letting me know, J-Red. Hey, Sergi, happy birthday. 21 doesn't come around very often. I hope you're not planning on going out and doing anything irresponsible that any of us wouldn't do ourselves on, say, the day we turned 21 years and years ago and probably ran a car into a ditch or something. No, there were no ditches involved. Happy birthday, Sergi. Really happy birthday. And I hope you do have a lot of fun. And it sounds like you got folks around you who will do their dead level best to make it more fun than you can even imagine. Happy birthday, Sergi, from me, from Agnes, and from the whole Horn family commune. Do let us know if there is much in the way of celebration. We like to live vicariously. Oh, Agnes, Agnes says, yes, tell Sergi I said happy birthday. So happy birthday to you from Agnes, too, Sergi. Agnes observing with regard to SpongeBob and Amazon and Netflix, children are business, and business is good. You see what kind of a night it's going to be? Yeah. But there is good news out there. I first went down the whole road to that led to that story out of Germany. News Ninja Gene sent this along, and it's inspiring. New Jersey Congressman Rush Holt is attempting to repeal the Patriot Act and FISA Amendments Act. Rush Holt is one of the best members of the House of Representatives this country has. See, it's in those moments, and you know, the Ron Paul libertarian types are forever. Did I say drove it into a ditch? I thought I said wound up in a ditch. But that's not very responsible, Bob. This is Sandra. Well, there was a time when I was not very responsible. But that may have just been, you know, by example. I'm sure there was. No, actually, as I recall, my 21st birthday was a non-event because I walked in, I got the six pack, I set it on the, and they looked at me and said, that'll be $3.95, and I gave them $3.95. Aren't you gonna card me? Well, no, it's obvious you're 21. What? The tattoo wore off? Oh yeah, we can always tell the underage ones. No, I don't think. No, the ditch reference is actually to a drive-by trucker's song. Your daddy was mad as hell. He was mad at me and you when he put that chain on the front of my car and dragged us out of that ditch that I'd slid into. So my apologies, Sandra. I didn't mean to seem irresponsible. But back to Rush Holt. The teabaggers and the libertarians and everything. Well, we just need to get rid of the whole dang Congress. Throw them all out. You know what? They're members of Congress I don't want to throw out. I'd like to have a whole Congress full of Rush Holts. I'd like to have a whole Congress full of Raul Grijalvas. And Louise Slaughter's and John Yarmouth's and John Conyers's. Because then we might have, there might be some hope for this government. But as it is, with the right wingers that can, no. And we're going to take back the House when? Right. Rush Holt of New Jersey, and isn't he also running for senator? I do believe he is. And good luck to him. He, by the way, is the son of a former West Virginia senator, and he's also like a nuclear scientist. He had great big brain. But he's got hillbilly roots, and I got respect for that, too. But he put out a statement saying, soon I will introduce legislation that would repeal the laws that brought us our current surveillance state, the Patriot Act and the FISA Amendments Act. My bill would restore the probable cause-based warrant requirement for any surveillance against an American citizen being proposed on the basis of an alleged threat to the nation. Hooray! I'm behind that. I'm all for that. I'd love to see that happen. What I think will be interesting. Drunk moped driving it in Thailand at 25. Oh, Sandra, I think your youth was more interesting than mine. but no, the Asbury Park Press published Rush Holt's editorial. And when he says he's going to do something, he'll do it. He's also going to propose genuine legal protections for whistleblowers, you know, real whistleblowers. So, it's one of those watch this space moments. And it will also be very, very interesting to see how many right-wing, freedom-loving, liberty, you know, Wolverines types get behind this. Anybody want to start the count? Because every count starts at zero. Yeah. Zero. Bueller. I mean, James Sensenbrenner was up there waving his arms and stuff. You know, he's the right-wing gas bag from Wisconsin who pretty much birthed the Patriot Act and all of its nasty, vile progeny. We'll see if he signs on to Congressman Holt's bill. Any bets? Anybody want to take the over on how many days after the bill gets introduced before Sensenbrenner? No, I didn't. No, not me neither. Don't have the money. Hell, I don't know if I can count that high. So, there's that, and that's a good thing. Let's see, shall we jump? Do we jump into the stupid yet? Oh, I don't. Is it? I want some kind of continuity here. Oh, no, I don't have the stomach for it yet. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, Thorn in the Side Thursday, this. This is from the White House briefing yesterday. You know, they have a briefing every day, whether they need one or not. Listen first, and then we'll do the analysis after. Ah, not again. Okay, so we won't listen. We probably won't play any music either. Damn. This is the story of, no, really, Gabe Finger. It's his name, Gabe Finger. Who, at the tender age of 16, a year younger than my son Ferg, managed to get himself a plum position as an intern at the Daily Caller. You might remember the Daily Caller. That's the sleazy little internet tabloid operation that, who was it? The horse's ass with the bow tie. Tucker Carlson. Started when Jon Stewart ran him off from CNN. You're a dick. Stop being a dick. Gabe Finger. Sorry, had to. That was required. No, Isaac, it's not Windows 3.1. Unfortunately, it's Windows 7, but it doesn't have anything to do with the operating system of the machine. It has to do with this incredibly frustrating mixer that I have to deal with. Probably more detail than we want to go into. No, but back to Gabe Finger. Intern at the Daily Caller. When you're a 16-year-old intern anywhere, what level of responsibility do you get? I mean, mailroom, right? Carrying memos from door to door. Can I get you some coffee? Interning. Learning stuff. Not necessarily, but no. The Daily Caller sent a 16-year-old intern out to the daily White House press briefing where Gabe Finger, I don't know if Mr. Bigglesworth is interning with him or not, the co-founders of Daily Caller are Tucker Carlson and Neil Patel, and they sent a high school junior to the White House press briefing where he raised his hand and got to ask his question. What was the pressing question being asked by Gabe Finger? Gabe Finger wanted to know No. Don't get ahead of yourselves. He didn't want to know whether or not Barack Obama is a secret Muslim Kenyan socialist with a deep-seated hatred of white people. No. He wanted to know whether or not President Obama has been providing protection to George Zimmerman and his family. Huh? Really, if you could hear the audio, and I'm going to do a restart and all that silly stuff that goes with it. If you could hear the audio, you would hear Gabe Finger ask if President Obama is providing security, protection for George Zimmerman and his family. And to be fair, Jay Carney, who can, on occasion, use some pretty professional weasel words, answered that protection for the Zimmerman family is something that the state of Florida would have to provide. Because, and you know, the subtext of that is because it's not a federal case. Literally. But that's not the end of it. That's actually where it gets good. Because Gabe Finger is apparently mouthy. Upon being told that no, Barack Obama is not providing protection for George Zimmerman and his family, Gabe Finger responded by saying, and I quote, "So they're on their own?" To which Jay Carney replied, "You can editorialize all you want, and I have no doubt that you will, but that is a ridiculous statement." I don't think Jay Carney just walks around looking for 16-year-olds to kick around. But apparently, over to the Daily Caller, they are absolutely desperate for a little bit of press, any kind of PR, because, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity. And that's what caused Tucker Carlson and Neil Patel to say that Gabe Finger is the most asked the most important question in Washington, D.C., really. Talk about missing the point. The real question is, why did it take a 16-year-old intern to raise an obvious and important question that the White House press corps should have asked days ago? Why should the White House press corps have asked that days ago? Why should anybody... Has anybody... I mean, what? The Zimmerman's house got TP'd or something in the night? No. Not much of nothing. But, oy. Kate got the joke. Yeah. 21 years old, Kate writes. 21 years old. Pulled out of that ditch up yonder in Zip City. There we go. Gabe Finger. Oh, he'll have a... You know, there are really, really intelligent young people out there. At 16... Actually, I would have trusted our Cassie to ask a really intelligent question. Okay, we got to do the math. Of would it have been the Obama administration, or would it have been the last dismal death throes of the dim leader regime? But I think we at 16 we absolutely would have had complete faith and we know I don't do that word, complete faith in Cassie's ability to ask a cogent question. But all 16-year-olds are not created equal. And Gabe Finger, with a chance to really make his mark on history, asks whether or not the feds have circled the wagons around Fort Zimmerman. Oh, Margaret. Yeah, Marty. Apparently, the Daily Caller was jealous of Malala Yousafzai getting to speak at the UN and getting a standing ovation from these in attendance. Easy with those equivalences there, Marty. And a note from Sergi. First of all, thanks for the birthday wishes, Bob, Agnes, and everyone. I'm so glad to be a part of the Horn family. Y'all are awesome. And yes, Lottie, donut burgers and chicken with fries are ruling the day in Fort Worth today. Second, I have a question, Bob. With all the talk about metadata in regards to Netflix and such, do they also collect metadata on what videos the average internet user watches on YouTube? If the answer is yes, uh-oh. Signed, Sergi. Yes, Agent Fred, those YouTube videos are G-rated fetishes, Kyle. I think they collect metadata on everything and make sense of nothing. Because somebody watched A Beautiful Mind, you know, the part before you realize who's his face is actually crazier than the sprayed roach, and he's sitting there pasting pieces of the TV guide and highlights for children and timber toes and shit to his walls. I think the right wing paranoia complex actually saw that part of the movie and thought it was a documentary. You never know when you're gonna right, except that well. Huh. Sorry, Sergi. I hope it didn't take a bite out of your birthday celebration. So it's time for me to see if I can reset this foolishness. And I'll try. It might take a couple of minutes. This is Conversation Radio. The lines are open. And you know the number, right? 304-658-3333. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. And let the conversation begin. Now, what's this going to sound like? I don't know. I think I'm going to have to reboot the whole damn thing. Let's see. 18. God, it'd be great to have a staff. Okay. So, going to shut stuff down. You will probably hear Glockenspiel music or The Four Seasons by the George and Billy Bob Vivaldi or God only knows what. But we'll be back. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. Trying to raise $150 tonight. We're an hour in, and we're at, hey, look, zero. But that's okay. Things work out. This is The Horn.
Second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, I think everything is reset to something approaching normal. To the extent that, you know, setting on a dryer and all that. I'm Bob Kincaid, this is The Horn. It is Storm in the Side Thursday here as we broadcast live from the APE headquarters, Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign headquarters on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. I apologize again for constantly having to be starting and restarting. I'm going to go to the
self-help boards or whatever for the manufacturer of this next desk and see if we can sort out some of the some of this annoyance. But everything does appear to be working. Gonna jump back into the chat room here. Now, like I said, we've got plenty of thin and sad Thursday material. Nuts. Thanks, Sparky. Charming.
All right, once more unto the breach, dear friends, right? Let's see if this thing is working at all. And I'll know in a second whether or not the audio has gone to hell. Yay, it works. Okay, let's... let's see if we can go forward with this for as long as it sticks. Now, and here's the fascinating part. All I did was restart. And I'm not going to sit here and bore you with the technical details of what this rig is, and you'd run screaming from the room. It would be deadly, disastrous radio. Assuming, of course, that having everything go sideways isn't just deadly disastrous radio in the first place. Oh, please. So, where were we? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Fritz. Thanks, Marty. Appreciate the input. Thank you, Isaac, for your help. Thanks. Thanks, Sparky, for your help as well. And for, yeah. Now, Thorn in the Side Thursday. And, of course, the phone lines are open. Agnes is answering the phones if you want to call in. Oh, well, okay. Stand by for a minute. Agnes tells me that Bill is calling from Cleveland, and as soon as that connection's established, we'll talk to Bill for a little bit. I hope. I trust nothing anymore. And okay, and Agnes, do we have Bill?
You do now.
Hey, Bill, what's happening, man?
Oh, man, I was, I'm not the only one that sweats over this stuff.
Do we have Bill?
Yeah, you know, I'm still running XP on both of my computers, and one of them isn't, I won't even put one on the net. And my keyboard gives me trouble because of the eyes, but speaking of some eyes, somebody sent me a beautiful on-screen keyboard, which helps a lot.
Oh, that helps.
Yes. His name a while ago. As thanks, you were giving thanks to him. That guy knows his business. And there's a fellow down south of me who also knows his stuff. He lives near Akron, and he's real good. And I've got to do something here. I want to cut these speakers off real quick. So, because one of them in the bedroom is so loud that... There we go. It's off. Yeah, I wanted to raise something with you that I heard last night. Who's the intellectual talk show host on commercial radio who... He's a real smart guy, very smart. He's a really good guy. He's a big name on the left-wing circuit. He's not on television. He's on radio only, but on internet. Oh, I can't think of his name. He was living in a houseboat. Oh, I can't think of his name, but he mentioned something yesterday.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, well, he's a good Joe. I mean, he knows his business. But he wrote about a piece that was in the news. Written by a young woman named Alifair Burke. Ring any bells?
Not yet.
How about James Lee Burke?
That
writer, Cajun detective Dave Robichaux.
Yeah.
Well, that's the name he was used on his mother in the book, and for Robichaux's mother and his daughter. Well, his daughter is Alifair, and she's a lawyer and a writer, and man, she had some comments on the Zimmerman affair, which is kind of like the telegram of First World War, the something telegram that helped drag us into World War One.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't that?
Zimmerman.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it was. No, it wasn't? Ah. But anyway, she had a nice piece of legalese about the trial and how poor it was conducted, in her opinion, but how the... I look at that prosecutor and I say, what the hell were you doing? I'm not really impressed with his work and that whole thing. But what I wanted to touch on was something Dr. Bill was talking about, people not reading, young people today not reading. And
right.
Man, that gets me. Because you and I hate to tell you how much I learned from reading American crime fiction with Mike Hammett. Two of Hammett's short stories, the Continental Ops series,
right,
for the magazine. Both of them, one was set in the Arizona border, and the other was set in Half Moon Bay below San Francisco. And two of the big parts of the backstory were illegal immigration. And those stories were published in 1920, early 20s.
Yeah.
Raymond Chandler wrote about a medical doctor. I think it was The Lady in the Lake was the name of the story. But there was a doctor who did nothing but go around treating drug-addled and alcoholic movie stars.
Yeah, that was The Lady in the Lake.
Yeah. And look what happened with Elvis and
mm-hmm.
with the great soul singer, the young fella, Jackson.
Oh, Michael, yeah.
This is nothing new, in other words, and that's what gets me about it.
Well, I think you could make an overarching argument, Bill, that within the arts community, it's real easy to get yourself in trouble real quick because you have to, and it doesn't matter if you're an actor or a musician, you sure as hell know it from the music world.
The pressure can get you.
Well, and when you ramp up your entire being, to pour everything that you have into a 2 or 3 hour performance,
yeah,
and then you just walk off and it's over.
Yeah, and the people that can surround a performer can ruin them. There's no doubt about that. The rest of the business aspect.
I read somewhere that Eddie Van Halen said he never performed sober from the time that he was from the first time he began performing in clubs. Until, what, a couple of years ago?
Well, see, I was the other way around. I prided myself until I was, I started when I was 20. I was pretty old. I think it was 65. I was 66. I was 23 when I started. So by the time I was, and I was still sober as a judge. Well, that's a bad choice of words, isn't it? I often wondered about that one. They must not have known some of the same judges that I ran across in my life. But I prided myself that until I was 27, 28, I didn't drink or imbibe in stuff that my dad had used That's what kills me about reefer. When your father gets popped with a pound of it in 1940, I was 3 years old, 1946. And luckily for my dad, his brother worked for the, you know, the guys that ran
the local ethnic benevolent and protective association.
Yeah, and the head of that association who he must have been pretty good at it. The guy who was a boss, because he retired and lived into his 90s, sitting on his front porch. You know, in the neighborhood. So he did right?
And yeah, seriously. I mean, the Monteith kid, the story was in the news just over the weekend. Big star in that little, and my daughter Doodle was just crazy about Glee.
Glee,
and,
yeah.
And he played a high school quarterback turned singer, 31 years old, playing a high school senior. Well, there's that.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, died of a mix of, God, heroin and booze or something like that.
Well, smack is bigger than I remember it being since the days of Lenny Bruce in that period and Charlie Yardbird Park.
Well, you know why, right, Bill?
Well, because they can bring it in.
Because hell wouldn't hold George Bush, but he must attack Afghanistan.
Oh, well, poppy, yes.
And opium poppy production went through the roof. The one thing, you know, say what you will about the rest of the Taliban, and there's plenty to say about them, but the one thing, we were, before September 11th, 2001, we were actually writing checks to the Taliban because they were going around and putting the poppy production out of business.
Yeah.
And when we brought the warlords back into the fore, well, their prime business is the heroin business. And, I mean, they ran production through the roof.
Well, what killed me for a while, hashish was big, and then you couldn't find it. And I'm thinking, where did it come from? Lebanon?
Well, that was always the line, you know, Lebanese hash.
And I forget what, and Lebanon was in such a mess politically that it seemed to disappear. I mean, not that I miss it, but smack is big. One county east of here, where I used to live for many years, Lake County, is loaded with it. And,
sure.
And how's it getting in here? Who's looking the other way?
I remember years and years ago, and I mentioned this story before. They ramped up the business so big that the producers back in Afghanistan were so full of themselves, they were stamping their own logos on bricks.
Honest to God.
You know, Hamid's homemade heroin, whatever.
Yeah. And I don't know. I know Mr. FBI, he said there was no organized crime. Well, I guess it's awful disorganized, but it sure seems to make money. I was talking to a friend of ours about the old policy, the old numbers racket.
Mm-hmm.
I started working in a factory that was full of working class people. Man, a bunch of Europeans, a lot of dark-skinned folks, a couple of guys from West by God, and me, a working class kid from the city, from the projects, and a hard nosed bunch. And man, oh man, all the ladies had the dream books for the numbers game. If you dreamt about something, you're supposed to play this number or that number. And I don't even know, now that we have these casinos all over the place and the state lotteries, I wonder if the old policy racket even exists anymore.
I don't know. I don't know if it does. One of the reasons, for instance, in West Virginia, that we have the gambling that we have, every corner tavern had two or three illegal video poker machines in it.
Yeah, that was popular. Yeah, I went to my uncle's one time, and there was like six pinball machines on the floor, and I'm like 6 years old. My uncle, being a cheapskate, he made my dad come up with money to let me play them. He wouldn't let us play him for free.
But, bars were so full of those things that the state said, hey, look, why don't we legalize this stuff and get a cut?
Yeah.
So now the way it works out, the supposedly in West Virginia at least, you know, all these poker machines, whatever, video lottery they call it, they're just random number generators. But they have to pay off a certain percentage of the time overall, and then everything that goes in, I think the state of West Virginia, in the case of West Virginia gets 52% of the take.
And I want to know who's counting that money once the state gets it.
Well, see.
I guess I'm asking for miracles. I don't know.
Yeah, Bill's mama didn't raise no dummy.
Well, no. When you learn that you're an uncle got your dad out of a potentially bad sentence for something that really... I remember seeing Barry Goldwater on television, I think, with the Chinless Wonder there on NBC. What's his name? I don't watch the Late Show anymore tonight. He took the Tonight Show over.
Oh, Leno?
He was funny at times when his writers are working good. The host, you know,
yeah,
of the
Leno.
Tonight Show. He's the guy who's still there.
Leno.
Yeah, Leno. He had Goldwater on, and Goldwater was talking about reefer, about marijuana. And you know where Barry grew up.
Sure.
Arizona. And he said it grew like weed all over the place. And it was been around for forever. And, I went through that whole thing in the 70s and the 60s with people getting arrested for it and doing time for it. There's more to talk about than I care to tonight, but I just wanted to get a... I didn't know if you had read Burke much at all, because I know you have read some... A lot of, they call it detective fiction, but to me it's a...
No, it's literature as far as I'm concerned. It's just a particularly American form of literature.
There is a very, very large amount of sociology in those hard-boiled... Ross McDonald used to write, one of his things was kids who witnessed things when they were small.
Mm-hmm.
When they hit their early 20s, they reverted to some pretty messy stuff they had seen as children.
Well, John D. McDonald...
I
particularly enjoy Raymond Chandler. There's a favorite quote that I have out of one of his novels about the nature of capitalism. Of all places to expect to find it in a hard-boiled detective,
Philip Marlowe.
Philip Marlowe novel. But it's a perfect little cameo. I mean, it's magnificent.
Which one was it?
I'm looking for it right now.
Okay.
One
of my favorites was he says, Marlowe says, I needed a vacation. But he says, all I had was a hat and a coat and gun, and I put them on and went out. Or went out to work or something. That's cynicism at its best. And the other one where Marlowe bumps into he's down in the central area of L.A., and he stumbles into a big guy who just got out of jail who goes in this bar. What the neighborhood had changed from the time the guy went into prison. When the guy got out, it was African-American neighborhood. And the guy went crazy. What happened to where he used to hang out before he went to jail for 10 years, you know?
Right.
It's funny, neighborhood changes really throw some people. And this guy went, Moose Malloy, the guy's name was.
Yeah, there's
that kind of name sticks with you.
Yeah, there's an element of Rip Van Winkle in that scenario.
Yeah, yeah. But Chandler wrote good stuff, and of course, Bogart did it. In fact, a guy sent me a whole bunch of... not tape, but CDs of old Sam Spade radio shows. And they're complete with commercials. Like, get Wild Root Cream Oil Charlie. I hadn't heard that since I was a child. God.
Well,
you haven't found it yet, huh?
I'm looking... I'm not real good at. I actually bookmarked it.
Chandler was English, if I'm not mistaken.
He'd been raised, I think, but of course, you know, he is the S. He's like an anthropological study in 1930s and 1940s L.A.
Yeah. Well, there's another guy who has covered the Black Dahlia and things like that in recent years, and I can't think of his name right now.
Here it is. And it's actually, I think it's the head detective talking or something. He says, there ain't no clean way to make $100 million.
Yeah.
Maybe the head man thinks his hands are clean, but some, and you can, wait a minute, can I do my real cheap Humphrey Bogart with this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't even know if I can still do it worth a damn. There ain't no clean way to make $100 million. Maybe the head man thinks his hands are clean, but somewhere along the line, little guys got pushed to the wall. Nice little businesses got the ground cut from under them and had to sell out for nickels. Decent people lost their jobs. Stocks got rigged on the market. Proxies got bought up like a penny weight of old gold. And the 5%ers and the big law firms got paid 100 grand fees for beating some law the people wanted, but the rich guys didn't, on account of it cut into their profits. Big money is big power, and big power gets used wrong. It's the system. Maybe it's the best we can get, but it still ain't any ivory soap deal.
You change those words around, and I can hear Dr. Bill making a statement like that with the...
Who would imagine, and this is in The Long Goodbye, one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who would imagine, Bill, that tucked away in a piece of detective fiction, there's a little tiny explanation of the fact that all business is dirty business.
It sure can be if people decide to run it that way. I mean, Henry Ford paid a fair wage, but what a goof off he was with the cross and the flag. You know, Gerald L. K. Smith and that. They were still publishing that when I was a young man because some woman I worked with was a believer in it, and she gave me a few copies, and thank God I had a fireplace, you know. Otherwise, what would you do with stuff like that?
Little bits of wisdom. Check this out, Bill. Also from The Long Goodbye, time makes everything mean and shabby and wrinkled. The tragedy of life is not that the beautiful things die young, but that they grow old and mean. And then this.
I don't think I knew me, but...
Americans will eat anything if it is toasted and held together with a couple of toothpicks and has lettuce sticking out of the sides, preferably a little wilted.
God, he must have been the same place that we've been, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this is 1944 he's writing?
Yeah. A while ago, I was only a year old at the time, so... yeah, that was a while. See, the thing is, that's what I enjoyed about those guys is that have things really changed or have they just been put on new clothes? But the end result is the same. And those of us who know about, you know, the Depression era, and people, I talk to people today, these youngsters never heard of it. What are they teaching in school? What are they teaching in American history?
They're teaching whatever, I mean, just by virtue of the way the system works, Bill, they're teaching whatever the state of Texas wants taught.
Yeah, you got it.
Hey, I got another one for you. You're going to love this.
Sure.
Because we talk about, see if this just isn't just rolling in relevance. Crime isn't a disease. It's a symptom. Cops are like a doctor that gives you aspirin for a brain tumor, except that the cop would rather cure it with a blackjack. We're a big, rough, rich, wild people, and crime is the price we pay for it, and organized crime is the price we pay for organization. We'll have it with us as long as time. Organized crime is just the dirty side of the sharp dollar.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do this all night.
Yeah, the quotations from these guys, and they were pulp magazine writers and writers of pocketbooks, but what they were writing was Ross McDonald wrote one of his books was titled The Far Side of the Dollar, and that's the trouble. You know, I always said that the earliest capitalist the best capitalist was the guy with the biggest gun and the darkest corner to hide out in. And wait for the customers to come by. And I said, that's the only time I ever packed heat was when I was working in places full of drunks that thought it was their fair duty to to go up and smack the guy in the mouth that's got a, his hands over his, holding a harmonica with a, you know, and then get, knock it down his throat, you know? Because the booze would make some people do strange things. Luckily for me, a lot of them were female, so they took a liking to me. That was pretty strange.
Well, you know, we were talking about gambling a minute ago. I'm just running through the bookmarks that I laid down on this thing when I was reading it. You know, talking about the transition from the benevolent and protective associations to the state being in the business. Check this out. You think those places in Reno and Vegas are just for harmless fun? Nuts. They're there for the little guy. The something-for-nothing sucker, the lad that stops off with his pay envelope in his pocket and loses the weekend grocery money. The rich gambler loses 40 grand and laughs it off and comes back for more. But the rich gambler don't make the big racket, pal. The big steal is in dimes and quarters and half dollars and once in a while a buck or even a five spot. The big racket money comes in like water from the pipe in your bathroom, a steady stream that never stops flowing. Anytime anybody wants to knock off a professional gambler, that's for me. I like it. And anytime a state government takes money from gambling and calls it taxes, that government is helping keep the mobs in business. The barber or the beauty parlor girl puts $2 on the nose. That's for the syndicate. That's what really makes the profits. The people want an honest police force, do they? What for? To protect the guys with courtesy cards? We got legal horse tracks in this state. We got them all year round. They operate honest, and the state gets its cut, and for every dollar laid at the track, there's 50 laid with the bookies. There's 8 or 9 races on a card, and in half of them, the little ones nobody notices. The fix can be in on any time somebody says so. There's only one way a jock can win a race, but there's 20 ways he can lose one, with a steward at every 8th pole watching and not able to do a damn thing about it if the jock knows his stuff. That's legal gambling. Clean, honest business. State approved. So it's right, is it? Not by my book, it ain't. Because it's gambling and it breeds gamblers, and when you add it up, there's one kind of gambling. The wrong kind. I mean, that almost sounds like, you know, Joe Friday or something, but the front end of that is the truth.
Who was that?
That's Raymond Chandler again.
Oh, my God, yeah. That's what I thought it was, because I've been a while since I've been through his stuff. I periodically have to go back and... I just ordered a book today called Chariots, not Chariots, but Something of Steel, about the British and German Navy in World War One, and the Germans had a possession off the China coast or on the China coast, and the Japanese got into the war and chased them, and the Germans sent 2 battle cruisers east and headed to west, east to the U.S. In fact, they fought off the coast of South America against British ships. And I'm trying to remember the name of it because being Germans, when they had this island, one of the first things they built and owned was a brewery. And it was the beer had a Chinese name to it. And in this book, they give the name, and I remember seeing that kind of beer around, and I can't remember what it was now.
Qingdao?
Pardon me?
Qingdao?
It could have been, yes. It could have very easily been that, because there weren't too many around 20-some 30 years ago. There were, you know, and we have a bar here in Cleveland, the Harbor Inn, that is just almost every kind of beer in the world is you can buy in that place, because they're... You know, since they opened that seaway, the Great Lakes are full of all kind of ships from all over the world. And in fact, one of the complaints has been that some of these guys come in here and blow their ballast, and the zebra mussel has come out of that.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yes, it is. Well, like when I was a kid, every restaurant was advertising blue pike. They're extinct. The walleye is the fish that brought the lakes back, and they're a lot cleaner than they used to be because you can catch smallmouth bass, and you know smallmouth bass will not live in.
No, they're a marker species.
So the price of clean air and clean water has been the loss of jobs, and that's a hard price to pay for the working person.
Yeah, but Bill, that's not.
Pay it eventually.
I don't mean to be disagreeable, but that's not necessarily the case, because when we try to retro, for instance, there's a boss man Wayne loves to tell this story. As a matter of fact, he'll have a bunch of guys in his local talking about how damned EPA, blah 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 blah. EPA regulates job killers. Well, you know what's kept some of those guys working for years on end? EPA mandated retrofits of coal-fired power plants. And so actually, cleaning up toxics is a pretty big business.
Well, yeah, we have a my dad's father worked with this Collinwood yard that belonged to New York Central. He had the wonderful job being a small guy like his son and his grandson. He used to crawl into the smokestacks on those steam engines and clean the residue out from the burning coal.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that left inside those chimneys?
Oh.
So they had to clean it out. Of course, it killed him.
Arsenic, mercury.
Yeah. Yeah, all that coal had attached itself to the walls as it, after it created steam.
And once it burns, it becomes hyper-concentrated.
And another little backstory is, we sent 5 battleships over to join the British Navy during World War I. And the British Admiral, I forget what his name was. I should know it, but you can't remember everything. And the British were incensed because they were still burning coal. And Jesus, when the Turks lost, the British went right for so-called Mesopotamia at the time, which we would call what today? Iraq.
Sure.
In fact, they fought a long war. Iraq fought a long guerrilla war against the Brits and through the 20s and into the early 30s, and the Brits quit because, number one, it was killing them financially, and the Depression was on. See, most people don't know that when we had the Depression here, it was everywhere. My mother's mother went back to Germany for a visit and came home with a 100-mark note, which she told my mother you had to have a bushel basket of them to buy a loaf of bread. Inflation was so bad in 29 and 30.
Yeah.
And we wonder why a guy like Hitler, who was backed by the military and backed by the rich, how he got power. You know, things were tough. That's why he got power. And from a German standpoint, if he got the mills cranked up, the steel mills and the machinist jobs and that, then he was a great guy until said time when he went completely berserk.
Yeah.
You know, and destroyed the country. But if you got people to work during the Depression, you were a great guy. FDR, that's one thing I'll say for the guy. I know the Republicans hate him to this day. But he had ideas. Hey, sending kids out west to learn how to build everything and anything is a lot better than having them stand around the corner with no money in their pocket and holding people up for a few bucks. It was, but some people still hate FDR for what he did. I hear a lot of people on the all-night drivers network shows.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah, that's got to be.
Yeah. And you know darn well, if it wasn't for the TVA, where would they have been, electrically speaking? Now, I know that they did things cheaply, and the TVA is a potential problem for anybody because nobody knew any better than to do what they did. It didn't seem that there was much being said about the environment.
Well, no, the Tennessee Valley compared to before and after TVA, there's no way to say that it wasn't a net positive, and anybody who is half mad.
People got to clean it up.
I mean, there were horrible yellow fever epidemics that broke out routinely in the area where I grew up.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And there was next to no development. Poverty was horrible. About the only thing going for that area was a little wagon works. I mean, it was awful. It was just awful. But TV power from the flowing of the river. It's only when they decide that hell won't hold them, but they must build first coal-fired power plants and second nuclear power plants. That's when the whole thing goes sideways, Bill.
Well, a nuclear power plant was thought to be a great item until people saw the results of what could happen. And especially when they keep them online long after they're supposed to be offline. Yeah, the one guy that was waiting in line behind me used to vote for... We were voting for Lyndon Johnson in peace. He was a West Virginia native. He was a guy who helped get me started working on cars, too. He knew, you know, he was one of you guys from the... when your car needs your work, you had to do it yourself. And he taught me that, and we're standing in line, we're voting for Lyndon Johnson in peace. So much for that idea. I'll let you go. I'll leave that as my last alleged thought for the evening.
All right, Bill. You have yourself a good evening. And
hey,
I don't know.
Hey there. There's a buddy of ours who I can't seem to get a hold of. It's bugging me. But he got a hold of you tonight, so maybe you'll talk to me tonight.
Yeah, you'll probably hear from him. You take care, Bill.
He's a hell of a guy. And there's also a guy from just south of here who I talked to last night, and he's a hell of a guy, too.
Yes, he is.
He's a guy from near Akron.
Yeah, he's frequently in the chat room. That's our buddy Jug of Punch. He's in there right now, as a matter of fact.
And I met a couple of guys on the phone that are just out of this world human beings.
It's what Betsy was talking about with the sense of community that really has developed around all of this, and I think it's beautiful.
I haven't talked to guys that had that kind of thinking since I was in my 20s, and the Vietnam War was at full tilt, and everybody I knew was taking part in trying to put an end to it. Anyway, you take care of yourself.
All right, you too, Bill. Bye now.
And by the way, there's a young Marine who calls, or ex-Marine. He's a hell of a guy, too. I enjoy hearing him. He reminds me of my father-in-law a lot. Take care of yourself.
All right, we'll see you, Bill. Bye now. And about 2 minutes before the hour, we'll take a break. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, 304-658-3333 is the number. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. And you can follow me on Twitter @BobKincaid. Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Head on Radio Network on Facebook. Goodness me, there's a lot of different ways to get involved. And yeah, it's thorn in the side of Thursday, and we got there's some real-life stupid still banging around out there for us to go play with, and we will in short order. Let's see. So, by the way, it being Thursday and everything, the Green News Report is on the way with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. This is The Horn, Conversation Radio. Conversation interrupt us, though it may have been because of technical difficulties this evening. Conversation just the same. We try to raise $150 to get through every evening's program. We are presently at zero. 1 minute before the hour, this is The Horn.
Afraid to drive a nail in. It's Thursday, July 18, 2013.
We have the kind of behavior that we're seeing now that created the situation where we lost the firefighters in Arizona.
Another major wildfire in the West. Climate change theater in the U.S. Senate. Oil giants fight oil spill fines. Big banks caught manipulating energy prices. Plus, Obama's EPA nominee finally approved in the U.S. Senate.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It is so hot that on my way to work this morning, I saw a squirrel stab a pigeon over a piece of ice.
This is
It is so hot here. You could cook an egg on a sidewalk, assuming that you like your eggs over hepatitis.
This is your...
Seriously, it is unbelievably f***ing hot.
All right, we get it. It's hot. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you took a few days off to go to Florida. You came back with a cold.
Yes, unfortunately, I did. But there was so much green news going on. I'm glad to be back so we can get to at least some of it.
Indeed. We have, as we go to air today, breaking news in from the U.S. Senate. For months, I have said I have no idea how the Senate is ever going to approve Obama's EPA nominee. And today, they finally did it.
Yeah, turned out Democrats had to broker a deal to stop Republicans from filibustering all nominees.
They had to invoke a partial nuclear option in order to do it.
Yes, so the vote was 59 to 40 with six GOP senators voting for Gina McCarthy to head the EPA, with one Democrat, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, voting with most Republicans against her.
So we had to wait all of this time, and she's voted 59 to 40, a landslide of approval. And yet we weren't able to vote on it for all of these months.
That's right.
Filibuster.
Extreme heat is adding to the fuel for a large and growing wildfire in Southern California.
Scientists meeting in Washington said climate change plays a factor in what's become a deadly and historic fire season.
Another heat dome has stalled over the U.S., baking everything from Minnesota to Maine in an extended heat wave and driving 17 major wildfires in the West. David Cleaves of the U.S. Forest Service tells NBC News that global warming from the burning of fossil fuels is pushing the increase in catastrophic wildfires.
Drier weather, longer droughts, and hotter temperatures. We have the kind of behavior that we're seeing now that created the situation where we lost the firefighters in Arizona.
While heat bakes the country, it's official. June 2013 was the second warmest June ever recorded on the planet, according to NASA, saying this past June was second only to the record set in 1998.
I don't know. Climate change deniers have said it's getting colder over the past 15 years, not warmer.
And of course, they're lying.
Oh.
Ironically, burning fossil fuels is hampering our ability to burn more fossil fuels. Mother Jones reports on a new study showing power plants that burn fossil fuels need water to keep cool, but they're having to shut down more often due to water shortages caused by more frequent heat waves and droughts because of global warming caused by burning fossil fuels.
Oh, man.
As the planet heats up in line with climate scientists' predictions, climate change theater returned to the U.S. Senate. On Thursday, Senate Republicans invited a familiar cast of climate science deniers to cast doubt on the expert testimony of actual climate scientists, economists, and insurance industry experts who testify that global warming is costing us a lot in recovering from extreme weather disasters.
Are you saying fake scientists shouldn't be given the same amount of time that real scientists are?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Eco-socialist.
The experts warned that extreme weather disasters are increasing, occurring twice as often as they did in the 1980s, and that the future costs of extreme weather will continue to rise and impact the U.S. economy.
Says you and 97% of the world's climate scientists, but whatever.
The Senate hearing shows Republicans and the climate change denial industry are beginning to shift tactics, claiming that cleaning up pollution will be too expensive. The Guardian says a bizarre point in Thursday's Senate hearing came when one Republican witness said cutting emissions is too expensive, so instead taxpayers should fund billions of dollars in risky experimental geoengineering schemes.
Really? So they're really trying to find any reason to avoid doing the right thing.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Australia's new Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, announced he is dumping Australia's successful carbon tax and foregoing $8 billion in revenue every year to instead switch to a weak carbon emissions trading scheme that has been pushed by Australia's biggest polluters. Big banks caught manipulating energy prices. J.P. Morgan Chase and Barclays Bank are fighting nearly $500 million each in federal fines after each was caught manipulating electricity prices over several years in western states. BP is fighting to reduce oil spill compensation payments to victims of its 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill disaster by accusing Gulf businesses of fraud. Oil giant ExxonMobil is fighting federal fines of nearly $2 million for its pipeline spill in the Yellowstone River in 2011.
Yeah, you tell them, giant corporations, don't let big government push you around. Fight the power. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us on the Twitters 24/7 at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Get well soon. This has been your Green News Report. We got to fight the power,
poor Desi. Bless her heart, she sounds like somebody turned her upside down and poured her head full of Quikrete. I know that sensation. It's just hell. Hi, I'm Bob. It's hour three. About 11 minutes past the hour. And just a couple of things. I'm guessing, my buddy, my colleague, John Fox, and, folks like the Angry Architect and our buddy Robert and Philip and other folks, down in Australia must just about be kicking furniture. One of the most meaningful carbon taxes on the planet is now going to be dumped. Not because it didn't work, but because spoiled, rotten, polluting, toxic babies cried about having to pay money to pollute. Damn it! It's in those moments when things that actually would be a net positive for the planet and for the future of the species on the planet are sacrificed on the altar of capital and politics and the shameless yearning for power. Well, it's in those moments that you kind of go, wait, I don't think we're going to be here much longer. I wouldn't order another drink if I were you. I can almost hear John down there, bugger. Because I know I'd be saying a lot worse. And this is one of those light motifs. Why will people vote for Kevin Rudd and his party when they could just have the Australian Liberal Party and be done with it? You know, it's Blue Dog Democrats all over again. But thanks going out. Many thanks going out to Randy and Sal and Karen. Thank you very kindly. You've gotten us a third of the way. In just a matter of a very few minutes, a third of the way toward this evening's fundraising goal. And for that, we are deeply, all of us who volunteer and work around this little effort, deeply, deeply appreciative. Couple of stories out there that kind of have to be hit or mentioned before the evening goes out, because otherwise, well, you know that Detroit declared bankruptcy today. And you know that part of what's going to happen is that people, you know, Detroit has $18 billion in unpayable debts. Well, some of those debts shouldn't be viewed as debts. Some of that debt ain't debt. Remember, when one puts money aside into a pension, it is deferred compensation. It actually belongs to somebody. And there's a whole bunch of people going to get screwed now. And they're people who have pensions. There are pensions that are owned huge sums of money. And they may very well get zeroed out. There are 30,000 people in the Detroit pension system. And they have a lawyer. The pension fund, the Detroit City Pension Fund, has a lawyer. They have lawyers. And when the bankruptcy filing was announced, dig this, this is how pig lickens operate. They went to the court for the filing. According to a story in the Detroit Free Press, when it came time to go and file the bankruptcy itself, the lawyers for the pension fund, and that means the lawyers for the people, lawyers trying to do good work, you know, that live greatly in the law stuff we talked about. Well, they raced to the courthouse as quick as they could. And in part of that process, the lawyers who were filing the bankruptcy on behalf of Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, who is as rotten a repiglican as draws breath in this country today, well, his lawyers said to the pension fund lawyers, listen, because remember the pension fund lawyer was trying to get a temporary restraining order until they could work out some means of protecting people whose actual money, see, that's not Detroit's money. That's people who worked for the money. They earned the money. They're going to have the money stolen from them. And, sleazy, slippery, slimy, filthy Rick Snyder's lawyers said, "Hey, pension fund lawyers, can we have a 5-minute recess? We got to go to the bathroom, okay? Okay, great, wonderful." And you know what happened then? The pension fund lawyer said, "Well, you know, I mean, this is just decency. I mean, sure, 5 minutes, no problem." And that's when attorneys for Rick Snyder ran over to a different federal court and filed Chapter 9 bankruptcy and put paid to any litigation, any injunction, anything that that the pension fund lawyer may have gotten. Ingham County Judge Rosemarie Aquilina said she was ready to issue the restraining order to stop the bankruptcy. But in those 5 minutes, those five slippery, slimy, sleazy, larcenous, fraudulent 5 minutes, it became too late. She said, "It was my intention to grant your request. But now, the pensions of 30,000 people, they're in the soup. They're not at the table. They're on the menu." Ronald King is the General Retirement System Counsel and Counsel for the Detroit Police and Fire Retirement System. And he said, "There's no denying this was a race to the courthouse this afternoon and yet another example of usurping the will of the people." As proof of the fact that it was done in bad faith, Governor Rick Snyder, sleazebag, said, "Oh, I can't talk about that. It's a part of pending litigation." And they're going to write, or at least they're going to attempt to write the finances of Detroit on the people who, in good faith, worked for the money and had the money set aside on the promise that it would be there for them when they retired. And now it's going to just get stolen, because that is what Republicans do. Merciful God. Oh, and from the doubling down department, I'm sure Texas Betsy and Beth are aware of this. It's got to be giving them conniptions as well as any other human being who cares about human rights in Texas, unhappy with their 20-week abortion ban, the right wing of Texas, the fascists, let's call them what they are, have doubled down. Three Texas legislators have now filed a bill that bans abortion after 6 weeks. It's one of those, and this thing started getting legs in Ohio. It's the fetal heartbeat bill. If you can hear a heartbeat, you can't have an abortion. And, of course, it will also be a transvaginal bill. Really, I think it is time that routine transrectal ultrasounds be mandated for male for every male in the state of Texas. I'm sorry, but prostate cancer is a killer, and the sooner caught, the better. And of course, that's not going to happen any more than all but five of Texas's gun stores were going to be closed. There was another brilliant piece of legislation filed by a Texas Democrat who wanted a stay on any proceedings regarding women's reproductive health care until there was a moratorium on Texas' apparent fascination with slaughtering the prison population. Six weeks. Now, can a member of the female half of the Horn family explain to me how many women are going to know they're pregnant at 6 weeks? And how long it takes, even if you know at 6 weeks that you're pregnant, how long it takes to make that decision? Jesus. There's no let up to them. None whatsoever. And then, of course, Marty asking me, saying we're not going to be here that much longer anyway. Didn't James Watt say something near that? Yes, I know what he said, but it's close. Yeah, but he said it for different reasons. He was, if I'm not mistaken, expecting the rapture. And while I saw some pretty apocalyptic looking thunderstorm clouds earlier this afternoon when I was walking around, I don't think that's going to happen. No, I think, we had the story at the beginning of the program of the language and the tribe that went extinct in the Andaman Islands. Well, it may be something that we all learn a little bit more about as time goes on. Oh, and two stories. You may have heard this one already because it's a week or so old. Or maybe more than a week. Did you catch the story out of Colorado about the birther baggers who want to secede from Colorado because the EPA is regulating the way their freedom? Wolverines! Yeah. Hot on the heels of that, welcome to Deer Trail, Colorado, where there's going to be a referendum on the 6th day of August on a town ordinance. You know, usually you have a town ordinance for, well, you remember I'm only a bill, right, on Capitol Hill? You know, oh, we need a stoplight at the corner of Oak and Main. Right? not in Deer Trail, Colorado. August the 6th, there's a referendum in Deer Trail to create drone hunting licenses, as well as provide $100 bounties for unmanned aerial vehicles. Why don't these dumbasses just move to Florida, where the damn things are falling out of the air in the first place? There would be, because, you know, freedom. Wolverines. There would be no background checks in order to get a drone hunting license in Deer Trail, Colorado. You can't have a drone hunting license in Deer Trail, Colorado, unless you're at least 21 years old. And by God, we're not going to have any of them foreigners hunting drones, because you have to be able to read and understand the English. I think that might pose a constitutional challenge. Philip Steele is a resident of Deer Trail. He drafted the ordinance. He said, "We do not want drones in town. They fly in town. They get shot down." Really? There will be $100 bounties for any unmanned aerial vehicle shot down. I think I think there's an element of it that's kind of like Alaska's Godzilla from Wasilla bill, where you have to bring in the wolf's paw. Well, you have to bring in a hunk of drone to get your $100 bounty. And this is all very funny, isn't it? Oh, how quaint, how stupid, how teabaggery. Except when it's not. Because this is nullification. No matter what you think of drones, unmanned aerial vehicles, you really don't have a Second Amendment right to pop off a few rounds at them. Among other things, it could pose a significant public health and well-being hazard, because when you go trying to shoot the drone down, you don't know where the drone is going to crash. And then there's that whole idea that federal law is supreme over state law. States' rights, damn it. Galt's Gulch. I think they should probably rename Deer Trail. Just rename it to Galt's Gulch now. God, the stupid is strong with these ones. Here's the text of the ordinance. The town of Deer Trail shall issue a reward of $100 to any shooter who presents a valid hunting license and the following identifiable parts of an unmanned aerial vehicle whose markings and configuration are consistent with those used on any similar craft known to be owned or operated by the United States federal government. Not even Mexican drones they're after. Or maybe baby blue painted UN drones. The dumbass behind this, Philip Steele, said, "This is a very symbolic ordinance. Basically, I do not believe in the idea of a surveillance society, and I believe we are heading that way." Somebody get Glenn Greenwald on the blower. We've got another hero for him. Our drone hunting license could be a huge moneymaker for the town. I wasn't born, but I remember being told stories of what happened right after Sputnik went up in 1959, 1960? Suddenly, enterprising insurance salesmen were fanning out over neighborhoods all over America selling satellite crash insurance. It was cheap, too. Promised to pay off if a satellite happened to just
fall out of the sky on your house. You know, if a fellow wasn't careful, he could wind up with somebody out there, some really mean federal lawyer, thinking that he was engaged in an act of warfare against the United States. I mean, after all, in the Constitution, treason is defined as taking up arms against, levying war against the United States of America. Isn't this that? It ain't hunting, because drones ain't alive. I do not believe in the idea of a surveillance society, and I believe we are heading that way. And then there's, dang, Deer Trail resident David Boyd, according to the Denver Channel, who says, I'm leaning towards voting yes. I'm good with passing it as long as it's safe. Well, what the hell is safe about shooting things? I mean, not that any... See, I'm so glad cooler heads actually prevail. Because it would be terribly, terribly easy for a cantankerous person like me in a position, you know, say I was in a position, you know what? I want you to fly every damn drone we've got over Deer Trail, Colorado, until those people are out in the streets shooting at each other. And the minute they bring one of them down, bring the whole damn National Guard down on them like a ton of bricks. Not because I support drones, but because I don't support civil war. These gun goobs are trying to create a 21st century equivalent of Sumter, Fort Sumter. Now, you can't just use any shooting gun in your drone hunting. It's got to be any shotgun, 12 gauge or smaller, having a barrel length of 18 inches or greater. You can't be using one of them 50 caliber high power shoot down a jetliner rifles that's really good for that kind of thing. And then there's Kim Oldfield, town clerk of Deer Trail. She says, I can see it as a benefit monetarily speaking because of the novelty of the ordinance. Possibly hunting drones in a skeet, fun-filled festival. We're the home of the world's first rodeo, so we could be home of the world's first drone hunt. If they were to read it for the title alone and not for the novelty and what it really is, it sounds scary and it sounds super vigilante and frightening. The real idea behind it is its potential fun. Civil war as fun. Oh, glory. And yeah, I got this one here, and it comes with bumper music. Yay. Just has to. Out of Boston, Malden, Massachusetts, in particular, Malden. We have a Malden, West Virginia. My auntie lives there. Story is datelined today, but it goes back to an incident on Christmas Day in Boston Harbor when Samuel LeClaire untied a boat from its moorings, a 68-foot ferry boat in Boston Harbor, hint, that did not belong to him, and went drifting around Boston Harbor. Well, they arrested him, Mr. LeClaire, Sam LeClaire, and they asked him why he do'd it.
And he said he was on the boat with his girlfriend Stevie Nicks, who he said was the pilot and captain of the ferry boat. Yes, that Stevie Nicks. He was arraigned. He was arraigned this past Tuesday in Boston Municipal Court. Police said he was disheveled and uncooperative. According to a statement from the Suffolk District Attorney's Office, quote, police did not locate the iconic singer-songwriter or any other person on board. So Stevie has gone from being not only of unique vocal stylings, but she's developed a cloaking device. Now, on Time Space, the best of Stevie Nicks, she's wearing a cloak. It's kind of velvety looking and sort of shiny baby blue, right? Yeah, so Sam LeClaire, this is for you. Of course, the way she mumbles. You know, with enough 100 proof in you, with enough bottled in bond in you on Christmas Day 2012, any amount of that mumbling right there could be, honey, go steal the ferry boat and go drifting around in Boston Harbor. Did she say something about a steamboat? Boston Harbor. Now, see, that song has confused me for freaking years, because I swear she's singing just like a one-winged dove sings a song, sounds like she's saying, ooh, baby, ooh, baby, ooh. And you know what? If I was a one-winged dove, I'd be, ooh, ooh, that hurts. Jesus. Yeah, see, right, Sandra. Yeah, and it's the way, you know, the way she works those skirts and dresses or whatever else she's wearing. You could easily wind up, you know, she's my girlfriend, and she wants me to take her out. She's the pilot and the captain of the ferry boat of my soul. You know, I'm halfway expecting Edward to call in any moment and tell us the joke that, well, never mind. I think Edward knows them all. Oh, God. Here's the fun part. When it's Christmas, and I imagine having to work Christmas in a big metropolitan area like Boston can get pretty interesting. Hell, working Christmas can get pretty interesting in Fraser's Bottom, West Virginia. But there's more opportunities for interesting police work on Christmas in Boston. But when you get popped for setting adrift a ferry boat and 68 feet long and kind of stealing it, and you appear disheveled and confused, well, it's good practice just to let one of the local psychological specialists have a conversation with the person who is Stevie Nicks' boyfriend. And they did that. And here's the fun part. This guy who said he set a ferry boat adrift in Boston Harbor and that his girlfriend Stevie Nicks was the pilot and captain of said ferry boat that was drifting about. Well, the mental health professional who examined and evaluated Mr. LeClaire found him competent. I'm guessing he was drinking the Christmas cheer through two straws. Judge Thomas C. Horgan admitted LeClaire to bail with the condition that he not board any watercraft while his case is pending, and that he avoid, eschew, if you will, Boston Harbor. What a country. And then, and I don't know if this is one of Adam Koresh, Kokesh, what, I don't know if this is one of his buddies or what, but it was a little creepy earlier today here in here in the district. Fellow went walking around with no shirt on and just his blue jeans. And well, no, he had more than just his blue jeans. He wasn't far from the White House when the Secret Service decided to take him into custody. This is Tuesday. Christopher Wade Briggs was the fellow's name. He had him. He was in Lafayette Park, and he had two knives and a pistol with him. And what is described as an open container of alcohol. His pistol carried 13 rounds. But, you know, 13 rounds isn't enough when you're getting liquored up in Lafayette Park by any stretch of the imagination. That's why I had two extra mags and 171 rounds of ammunition. He wound up, Christopher Wade Briggs did. Freedom! See, he was having his freedom impinged upon. He was charged with carrying a pistol without a license. He was charged with two counts of possession of prohibited weapons. He was charged with a count of possession of an unregistered firearm, possession of unregistered ammunition, and possession of an unopened alcohol container. So he had an open container and an unopened container. That's what you call backup. Here's the fun part. As Mr. Briggs wandered toward the White House with his pistol and his magazines and all his extra ammo and his open container of booze and his unopened container of booze, and I'd really like to know what the booze was, he told the Secret Service when they took him down, and the photograph I have here of him is, they're being pretty decent to him. I mean, he's not on the ground eating dirt or anything. He's got his hands behind his back and walking shirtless. And yeah, I don't have to tell you, this is a really, really pale dude, right? They asked him what the hell he was doing. He said, well, I was only going to fire a couple of shots if no one confronted me. If no one confronted me. It's that if no one confronted me part that really does provide the problem. Because when you got one open container of booze and you got your back up there waiting for you, well, it's hard to say what he's going to determine to be confrontational. But I'm looking at the photograph here. He was right over by the, curious, Council on Environmental Quality. Son of a gun. Over toward the corner where the Stephen Decatur House is. Here's the fun part. The arrest was only made when a uniformed Secret Service officer just happened to notice that he had a gun in his waistband. He made no threats and nobody was hurt. Well, no threats except for the part where he said that he wasn't going to do nothing more than fire off a couple of rounds and wasn't going to hurt anybody if nobody confronted him. Isn't that what Adam versus the man keeping his name, keeping Adam down? Isn't that what he said? Yeah, we're going to march through Washington and we're going to be peaceable as long as nobody makes us be unpeaceable. Yeah. I wonder, was it beer or did he have himself a couple of pints of bottled in bond or Here's the fun part. If by some strange twist of fate he should happen to be acquitted, you know what happens? They'll give him back his guns. And they'll give him back his ammo. And they'll give him back his clips. Because we value freedom in America. Oh, for pity's sakes. And I walk around here, and maybe it's just because I'm some sort of a Pollyanna, or I mean, I'm aware of my circumstances and my surroundings when I'm walking around, but I'm... It's a little frightening. Because, see, that dude, remember, dude was a lawful gun owner. And that's the trouble with lawful gun owners. It takes about 1/1,000,000 of 1 second for them to go from being a lawful gun owner to being an awful gun owner. I was just going to squeeze off a couple of rounds. I mean, hell. Got a nice park here. Got a bunch of trees. I figured I'd just do a little planking. I wasn't going to shoot nobody unless nobody confronted me. Huh. Sleep tight tonight, America. Aren't you glad that the uniformed Secret Service officer just happened to notice the guy walking around with a freaking handgun sticking out of his waistband and him not wearing a shirt? Thank God he was shirtless. It was hot today. It was hot. I mean, I was pretty well drenched. Well, and I was thinking, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take my shirt off. Here I am walking down Pennsylvania. I'm going to take my shirt off. And then I thought, no, because if you do that, you may think you're going to cool off, but actually, by perspiring, as the perspiration evaporates, that cools the body, and you're actually going to be cooler, Bob, with your shirt on. So, Bob, leave your shirt on, and don't blind anybody with your incredible pinkness. I'm grateful that, what was his name, Bubba Cephas Briggs. Oh, Christopher Wade Briggs. C.W. Briggs. We'll call him C-Dub. I'm glad that C-Dub didn't understand that you're actually cooler when you keep your shirt on, because then the uniformed Secret Service agent might not have noticed the firearm sticking out of his pants waistband until he started that harmless plinking where he's going to squeeze off a couple of rounds. And you know what? When he sobers up, I bet you C.W. Briggs will be happy about that, too. Because C.W. Briggs will realize that he's still alive to be glad he's still alive. Because if he'd squeezed off a couple of rounds, I'm pretty sure he would have sprouted several holes. This is a nervous, nervous town. I'm guessing from the looks of the photo, though, it'll be a miracle if he gets even appointed counsel. Right? Yeah. Well, that's the truth. The Weisenheimers of the chat room. You know Lafayette Park wasn't one with a registered firearm. Yeah, by the way, thanks for your patience this evening through the technical difficulties. We'll probably have more technical difficulties tomorrow evening on the program, and I'll thank you for your patience then. Hey, that's true. Maybe he was on a recon mission for drones. Or again, I think it's equally likely that he's part of Adam versus the Man's Freedom Brigade. And again, a very happy birthday to Sergi. And everybody's celebrating his 21st birthday with him. And again, thank you. Thank you also, Sal and Karen and Randy, for getting us a third of the way toward our fundraising goal this evening. It's much appreciated. Maybe between now and airtime tomorrow night, the other two-thirds will roll in. And we will have Friday on the front porch material. Was it Jeremy who mentioned last night the story about the New Yorkers, the Satanists, who gave as good as they got in terms of Fred Phelps? A group of New Yorkers called the Satanic Temple, going and doing a gay wedding on the grave, the alleged grave of Fred Phelps' mama. And here's the fun part. One of them even teabagged Fred Phelps' mama's tombstone. Who? The Satanic Temple now believes that Fred Phelps must believe that his mother is now gay in the afterlife due to our pink mass, and nobody can challenge our right to our beliefs. Oddly enough, for once in their miserable existence, the Westboro Baptist Church had no comment. Of course, the Westboro Baptist Church will comment when they find these folks and serve lawsuit papers on them because they're a bunch of grifters, and that's how they find the money to go and do what they do. The Satanic Temple, by the way, is hoping to get themselves a hunk of road in New York State that they can go and keep clean as part of the Adopt-a-Highway program. The requirements for Satanism have apparently fallen off significantly in the past few years. Adopt-a-Highway for Satan. Well, thanks, everybody. Y'all have a wonderful evening. And I'll be back here tomorrow evening, 6 p.m., Eastern Time. And it really would be nice if everything didn't fall apart technically, but we'll take what we can get. And have a lot of fun anyway. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen, those of you who kindly contribute the money that keeps the bills paid, and there are bills to be paid. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to everybody who shares their time. Finite, precious time engaging in this conversation in whatever way you engage in it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Agnes, by the way, sends love. She really does. She adores y'all. Maybe more than y'all adore her. And, of course, thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and, yes, acheact.org, acheact.org. We're working the Senate side of the Congress these days, so if you want to get in touch with your Congress, your senator, and let him or her know that you'd really like for them to introduce the companion to the ACE Act in the Senate, it would be massively beneficial. Because there's got to be some sort of a hero out there that's willing to help. Thanks, everybody. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.